Halo, halo, Sacred Icon listeners. We used to do ads for other people, but I decided, why don't we do one for ourselves? Whether you're here listening to us for the first time or you've heard every episode, I'd like to briefly tell you what we're about and how you can support us. We have been doing this podcast since 2019, and with that has come lots of changes. We started as a primarily Halo-only show, but have evolved, combat evolved, over the years to talk about a wide variety of things in the realm of nerd culture. As you can imagine, we've made numerous changes to our platforms, usernames, and emails over the years, so now is the time for me to set things right and give the Covenant back their bomb. You can join our Discord by clicking the link included on our podcast feed. You can also send us an email or a voice message at sacrediconpodcast@gmail.com. We have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/sacredicon, and we no longer use Twitter or X or whatever else the kids are calling it these days. So if you see someone who looks like us there, just know it's not us. Lastly, you can support us on patreon.com/sacredicon and receive a bevy of bonus content. We're so glad you chose us to be the voice in your ear on this particular day and hope you enjoy the episode ahead. Keep it secret, keep it safe, keep it sacred. This is Brian coming at you with our friend Joe Smalley to talk about what the year 2024 is going to look like in gaming. Chances are you're probably listening to this in 2024 right now, but for the record, we recorded it on the last day of the year, so we got ahead of the game. But basically, what I kind of want to do is first we'll have just a brief reflection on what 2023 looked like as a year in gaming, and then we're going to kind of go through from the beginning, from January releases all the way to December, and then games that are announced for next year but don't have a date, and just kind of talk about not only games we're interested in, but games we know will be big, and what 2024 is going to look like as a year in gaming going forward. But Joe, how are you? Did you have a good 2023?
Yeah, I mean, 2023 was quite a, I would say, like, productive year for me. Like, I got heavily into, like, sort of cardio and fitness. I walked a lot of mountains, as people in the Discord will know. Did lots of camping. And also, I did a decent amount of gaming. I mean, I wish I kind of did more, but obviously it's sacrificing the other hobbies for for that free time. But
you saved it there at the end, Joe. You almost touched too much grass.
Oh,
opening. But, you know, you put a little bit of the basement dweller there on the end, like,
yeah, we got to represent the gamer, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I've got the whiskey, happy to be here as always, Brian, and we're just, it'd be nice to look forward to look at 2024 and to see what's coming, because 2023 for me so far has been kind of like just trying to stay with it, you know, because the amount of amazing releases, so it's nice to kind of take a minute to look to the future.
Yeah, well, yeah, to me, 2024, and I could end up being wrong about this, but it seems more like a regular year to me, like not a bad year for gaming, but not an exceptionally good one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, what are our, I mean, I don't want to talk about it too long because we've already done episodes on it, but, like, what's our broad strokes impressions of 2023 for gaming? Because for me,
phenomenal.
It's basically 2023 is one of the best years in gaming, a year with an insane amount of releases, many of them very high quality, and probably most likely the culmination of COVID pushing things back is what led to 2023 being such a packed year. So that's pretty much what I have to say about it. Banger year, lots of releases, going to be hard to follow. And what does it look like? Like, I'm kind of wondering if, like, obviously COVID's going to affect everything in a sense going forward forever. But, like, it kind of looks like 2024 is more of a regular release year rather than one that was impacted by development with COVID. Like, maybe a lot of the releases here were primarily done past the work from home, you know, no shots are released yet type deal. So yeah. So what do you think about broad strokes 2023, Joe, for video gaming?
I thought it was phenomenal. I mean, phenomenally overbearing is probably the sort of phrase I'd use. Just yeah, it was amazing. I mean, we had, like, what, Dead Space remake, we had Resident Evil 4 remake, which I still need to get around to playing, you know, I mean, Starfield, I mean, it was so chock-a-block full. And then for indies, you had, like, you know, Sea of Stars and Dave the Diver, if you consider that indie, and stuff like that.
Cocoon, Dredge,
it was mind-blowing. And yeah, it was just a fantastic year. I mean, alongside 2007 for me is probably, like, top two best gaming years.
Yeah.
But and to be honest, 2024 for me, even though we're looking forward and I'm looking forward to the games coming out in 2024, maybe things like obviously like Death Stranding and stuff if that gets a release date, but 2024 will be the year I still use to catch up on 2023 games. You know, it's gonna be a great year just because it's gonna slow down a little bit, let me take my time and ease into it. But yeah,
no, I wouldn't be surprised if 2024 ends up giving us more for our money than we thought. Like, I could just see by, like, let's say we get to, like, E3 of 2024, and we've all played three games, maybe, by that point. Then there's so many announcements and release dates for the second half of the year, it suddenly becomes, oh, here's another year where there's, like, a dozen games I want to play, you know? So, but yeah, so 2023, I mean, it was a banger year. I got nothing bad to say about it. Moving into 2024, so what Joe and I are going to do, and I just pulled up one of various gaming publications lists. You can go to lots of places. Pretty much any big publication will have a list of upcoming games in 2024, and I chose GameSpot this time around, too. So we'll start with January, and basically what Joe and I are going to do is we're going to touch on all the games that we either care about or we think are going to be big talking points in the industry. Obviously, we'll miss some, I'm sure. There'll be something on here that someone really cares about that we don't mention. But for the most part, I think we'll pretty much have it covered. So starting with January, to give you guys kind of like an example, like there's games on this list like Atlas Wept and Graven and Howl. Those don't mean anything to me. That's not me dogging them. I don't know what they are. I haven't heard about them. I don't know if they're indie or AAA. So things like that, we're just going to gloss over. But we'll start with the first release.
We're not going to do the critical frames thing where we talk about everything that is on the list.
Hey, we could. And I'm glad you said that because that's something else I want to mention at the top of the episode that I forgot, which is we're going to approach this differently than we normally do. A lot of times we want to talk about games in detail and we want to talk for a long time, but we're pressed for time. So I said, Joe, here's what we're going to do. We're going to start in January. We're going to talk about everything we want as much as we want. And we're going to quit this episode at 90 minutes. So you guys can already guarantee this episode is going to be an hour and a half long because we're just going to make it multi-parts. So if we get to like April and that's 90 minutes, we'll stop there. We'll come back with a part two and continue on. That way we can really say the things we want to say and not feel cut off. So
going to be a nice series for you.
Yeah. So going forward, Joe, first game that releases in 2024 that I think will really draw a lot of conversation would be Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, which for those of you who don't know, and I'm sure most of you have probably seen it from a game show prior, it's a different stylized kind of 3D side scroll Prince of Persia. I think side scroll kind of undersells it because it looks a lot more ambitious than what you might expect from just side scroll. But it's got a new prince. It's not the typical prince from all the prior games. Yep. And it's kind of the rebirth of the series in a bit. Like, I know some people probably won't count it as a proper return of the series because it's not the 3D like games that are so popular that came before Assassin's Creed, but it does look very good. I know there's people excited for it. I think it's a little weird that, like, you know, they announced the Prince of Persia remake like what, 2 years ago, and then
way before,
like,
this
delayed and canceled and rebooted. And now this is the Prince of Persia we're getting. So I won't be picking this up just because I'm not a huge fan of Prince of Persia or this style of game. But I do think it looks good and I'm excited that it's coming for people in general. What do you think, Joe?
It won't be something that I'll pick up day one. I'll be honest, I don't know if I'll pick it up at all, but it's definitely something that I'm going to keep my eyes on, or at least one eye open for, because I've always been a fan of the old Assassin's Creed, which is obviously the series that basically replaced Prince of Persia due to, like, Ubisoft not wanting to pay the license anymore. And I always loved Prince of Persia. Obviously, everyone loves Sands of Time and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, I'm interested in The Lost Crown. I'm interested in it because mechanically it looks very, it looks rather in depth for a 2D action platformer. It scratches that kind of Hollow Knight itch slash Dead Cells, even though it's not a roguelite or a roguelike. I'm just excited for it in terms of seeing Prince of Persia as a franchise come back. It's kind of them somewhat dipping the toes back in that pool, you know, testing the temperature. Hopefully it does well so that we see the return of a 3D Prince of Persia potentially. You know, alongside the remake, like maybe a follow-on or a completely new, a completely new timeline or series or single player story or whatever. And I just want to, it'd be nice to see kind of Ubisoft try and bring back some of those legacy franchises. You know, I'm not going to tangent too much, but things like obviously Splinter Cell's getting a remake, Prince of Persia's getting that remake. It'd be nice to see Prince of Persia come out with new games after which, alongside the new Splinter Cell games, hopefully, if they do well. So this is the first step for them.
Yeah, I want us to, I kind of want us to be aware as we go through this too of like, how do I want to put it? Like, kind of having an idea of what we think the industry, the game industry at large might look like as the year goes on. Because like, you know, with hindsight being 2020, we can look back on 2023 and say, okay, things that we didn't expect that kind of happened. Hi-Fi Rush was a game that was dropped out of nowhere. Redfall fell flat on its face in a big way and really put a target on. And I know Redfall, a lot of people thought, you know, it didn't look that great, but I think no one quite fully grasped how much that would hurt Microsoft at the beginning. You know, Activision, Blizzard's deal going through, the great showcase by Microsoft, Sony having a weak showcase. So, like, as we talk about these games, I'd like us to kind of keep it in our mind, just ideas we might have for things that could happen next year that we might not expect. So,
yes.
With saying that, do we think Prince of Persia will, The Lost Crown, and I'm not going to do this for every game, I'm just kind of setting you up, but like, do we think this will do anything for the conversation in the industry or that maybe we're not expecting other than just, oh, it's a game release and then we move on from it? I don't necessarily have anything on my mind, but like,
it's going to be one that we move on from.
100%. I think so.
It won't shake the industry like Hollow Knight, in my opinion. It definitely won't shake it like Dead Cells. Yeah, I can't see it doing anything crazy. I think it's more like I said, it's more of Ubisoft sort of using it as a tester, and that'll be about it. And it'll be, I think it might be like a cool hit though. I think it could be like something that everyone's like, yo, that game was really underrated.
That's what I find interesting though, is like, there's always a chance that we come back to this episode a year from now and it's like, oh, we didn't know that Prince of Persia was going to introduce some new game mechanic that blew up and is now
a new genre
are pulling from. Yeah, right. Like, it's like it becomes a new genre, like the Lost Crown likes out there or something like that.
I doubt that'll happen.
Yeah. But speaking of like kind of predictions for like where things could go, moving on to the next game that is worth noting, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. To my knowledge, have you played any Yakuza games at all?
Yep.
Joe?
I played Zero, yeah.
Okay, did you like it?
Yeah, I did. I didn't beat it. I got about 30 hours into it or 20 hours into it or something like that on the PlayStation, and it was really good. I mean, that's not like Like a Dragon. As far as I'm aware, Like a Dragon has gone more turn-based, right? Like,
Well, you're probably, because obviously since you've played 30 hours of a game, I'd like to say you probably know more than I do, but my understanding is that Yakuza was initially a spin-off title, but now the company has internally decided that all Yakuza games will also be called Like a Dragon, because Like a Dragon was the initial title, and they want to get back to that being what the series is known for, is the title Like a Dragon. So I think even Yakuza-style games are called Like a Dragon now. I could stand correct.
Yeah, they've completely, I think, so I don't know if you're right or I'm right here, but I always under the impression that Yakuza was the original sort of name for the franchise, and then they moved to Like a Dragon because of marketing reasons, and they didn't want to be like associated with the Yakuza. I could be
that
wrong, though. I mean, you might be going way back before even I'm speaking.
I'm not sure.
I mean, we are very, like, we're novices in these games.
Yeah.
But yeah, Yakuza Zero was like a beat 'em up more, and then when they moved to Like a Dragon, they move towards that sort of turn-based JRPG style. And as far as I'm aware, a lot more people got into that kind of style of gameplay, surprisingly, because you'd think a beat-em-up would be like more popular, right? But
yeah,
the new Like a Dragon style was like perfect for what people wanted, it seemed. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to pick this up just simply because it feels like a lot of Like a Dragon / Yakuza games come out very often, and I can't seem to keep up with them. It seems like one comes out every year almost. And I just can't keep up with them, but it looks good. The trailers look pretty good, like every Yakuza / Like a Dragon game. And I mean, maybe one day.
Well, I'm wondering if this will be the game to like break through. Because in one sense, in Like a Dragon, Yakuza, it's already broke through. Like, it's already a popular series, but like, this is a series that I think if anyone's been paying attention, it kind of gets more and more popular each year.
Mm.
And I don't think it's yet hit levels of like Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty or Far Cry or anything like that. But it's moving up and it's becoming more relevant. And I'm wondering what that title's going to be that makes Like a Dragon something that like everyone's playing and not just a lot of people. And maybe that's Infinite Wealth. I really don't know enough about the series, but I definitely know this will be one that's on people's radars for sure.
Yeah.
Last release for January that we think will move the needle at all will be Tekken 8. I know this is a fighting game that people have been looking forward to for a long time. There was a conversation for a while of like, man, is 2023 going to have Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and Tekken all in the same year? It's going to be crazy. But Tekken, you know, got itself in its own pocket in 2024, which I think is probably smart because it's heavy competition last year. And I'm not very familiar with Tekken myself. I just know it's beloved. And I think it's probably going to be the biggest fighting game next year. I mean, even though it's January, I think we'll still be seeing this at the awards probably for fighting games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fighting game person at all. Like, my brain completely switches off when I watch people play it, whether it's streaming or friends play it. And I'll dabble, but I'm very much just like, I used to be quite good at them. I used to play, like, I first started on Tekken with Tekken 2. I think that was on the PlayStation 1, if I remember correctly. And then I think I did Tekken 4 and then Tekken 6. And I dabbled in Tekken 6, but mainly Tekken 2 and Tekken 4. And as much as I like them, again, my skill set from other games just doesn't come over into fighting games. Like, I'll just end up, like, I'm essentially headbutting the controller. Like, I can't do any of the combos. I can't remember them off the top of my head. Like, I'm not good, you know? So
yeah, no, I'm not either. I'm dog shit.
Yeah, I'm straight dookie. But, like, I enjoy them for what they are. I like the stories, even though I had no idea what was going on half the time, because it's very Japanese. I was always more of a Mortal Kombat person. Like, if you had to pick one fighting franchise, Brian, what would you pick? Like, what would it be?
Well, if we're going with typical fighting, which I think is the conversation we want to have, because I'm not going to say Super Smash Bros. That's different.
No.
I would just, because I'm not a fighting game person, and I think this echoes why it's so popular, I would choose Mortal Kombat, because Mortal Kombat is very much the mainstream fighter. Like, even people who don't play fighting games, they're like, oh, Scorpion? Oh, Sub-Zero? That's cool. I'll pick it up. I'll play a few matches and then buy a skin and then not play anymore. Mortal Kombat's the easy one to pick up for sure. Plus, I did pick up the original Injustice.
When it
came out, which is, you know, Mortal Kombat with DC skin kind of.
Yeah, yeah, that was alright.
And I had fun with the characters and the stages. It's just, for me, fighting games, since I'm not competitive, it's basically like I play it for a few hours and I've made my peace and I'm kind of bored.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
this won't be one for us.
No.
Yeah. Okay, Joe, moving into February, this is kind of the month that inspired me to say maybe we should do multiple parts for this episode, because I wouldn't be surprised if this episode ends and we're in February. That's not my goal. It'd be cool if we get through it quicker, but hey, we'll do what we want. Starting right off the top here, February 2nd, Suicide Squad killed the Justice League. It's like we're some kind of Suicide Squad or something, am I right?
Brian's about to go off.
Okay, guys, this game, like I said, we're going to talk about games we don't care about that are big. So that's why we're talking about Suicide Squad. For those of you that don't know, the Batman Arkham games are some amazing games that many of us love and have played multiple times. They're made by a studio called Rocksteady, who was relatively unknown prior to the Arkham series. They made a game for the original Xbox called Urban Chaos that nobody cares about.
Oh, I love that game.
Do you really, Joe?
No.
I knew you didn't. I knew you were joking. But they came out with Arkham Asylum, came out of nowhere, just blew everyone's minds, and then, you know, went on to do Arkham City. You had WB Montreal do a spinoff, Arkham Origins, but then it was Rocksteady finishing the Arkham trilogy with Arkham Knight in 2015. And since 2015, Arkham Knight took a long time to get done. So after Arkham Knight came out, everyone was like, okay, it's going to be a long time before we know what Rocksteady's working on next. Not going to worry about it. Mm-hmm. And people were wondering, because they said it wasn't going to be Batman. So they're like, is it going to be another DC character? Are they going to do a new IP? I mean, this studio is so talented. And a few years later, we get the announcement that they're working on a Suicide Squad game, which already was slightly disappointing for me. But I'm like, okay, great studio. Then it was subtitled Kill the Justice League, which is like, what?
I sleep.
Like, I don't, like, not only do I not want a Suicide Squad game, but, like, I don't want the premise of Rocksteady's next game to be killing an evil Justice League. It just sounds very uninteresting to me. And then as details continued to emerge, it became known that this was a third-person shooter set in the Arkham universe, taking place after Arkham Knight, with lots of, like, I don't know what you want to call it, loot boxy, microtransaction, online only. Live service
junk is what I call it.
Live service junk, yeah.
Trash.
It is trash. and it's confirmed that when it comes out, it'll be an online only game. They said there'll be a patch sometime in the future to make it playable offline, but that tells me enough already of what this game is and where this game is designed to be. Not to mention the fact that this game was supposed to release about 7-8 months ago, but because it had such a terrible backlash and like the interest just wasn't there and it was a busy year, they pushed this thing out all the way to 2024. And they've put out some new trailers and some conversations with devs to talk about what this game is and to try to paint it as more of an Arkham-like game.
Mm.
But in my opinion, not that it's a fact, you know, my opinion is that it looks like a very shoddy microtransaction. We want to milk the customer.
Yeah.
It's not based on strong storytelling and character work. The game is very flashy with like jumping around and like lots of purple and shiny, weird, gooey, like, I don't know, just the whole design.
Gooey.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it just, the whole design just completely just puts me off. And yeah, between this being an online only game and the microtransactions and it's featuring the Suicide Squad trying to kill the bad Justice League, it's just nothing about this game interests me. I have no interest in it at all. I'm not going to buy it. It's sad to see Rocksteady spend, what, 9 years on this?
That's wild.
After Arkham Knight.
Like,
I guess you could say they did that VR Arkham game between, but that
what have they been doing?
They've been trying to perfectly craft a way to milk people for money, and that takes more time.
WB, what are you doing to them?
I know. Well, and the thing is, the big heads of Rocksteady that like everyone knew, they left a year or two ago.
Yeah.
So
I remember that.
If all that didn't make you already kind of wonder skeptical, if this is gonna be any good, I mean that's not good news. But yeah, Joe, I got no interest in this game, but it's going to be pretty big. I mean, we know it's going to sell millions of copies, whether that's 3 or 13, I don't know, but it's going to sell millions.
Yep.
It's a big property. It's by a studio that's beloved, even though I think this will be the point where they don't have the track record. Right now they have a good track record because their last game was Arkham Knight. I think this will be the turning point. But what do you have to say about Suicide Squad, Joe? Are you going to pick it up?
So there's only two things that make me interested in this game. The gameplay looks fast, kinetic, and fluid for a third-person online shooter, which is great. And the fact that Kevin Conroy has lended his voice in talent.
I am Batman. Interested in that part, yeah.
But the latter part is not enough to make me buy the game. I'm sorry, like, as much as I love Kevin Conroy, I mean, who doesn't? Like, it's not enough. The gameplay has just got to be amazing, you know? And is it going to be fully priced, like $70 kind of job?
Oh, yeah, it's a full-price game.
Yeah.
$70.
Like, I worry with these games when it comes to, like, the progression system and also, like, just the onboarding when it comes to kind of, like, the servers on day one and stuff, because that can kill a game massively. And, like, since as far as I'm aware, like, Rocksteady have never done a game like this where it's always online. It's
nothing like this, yeah.
I always worry for like sort of technical issues when it comes to new studios with this, especially when they're like, if it's going to be like a spin-off title and it's going to be like lesser in price or it's going to be free to play, cool, like I'll give it a go or whatever. Like if it's like 40 quid, $40, whatever, like I'm kind of like more obviously everyone's going to be more accepting of that, but if it's like full price, it's like I could just, I mean, like, we'll get to it, but like in February, like you got things like Helldivers 2 and Tomb Raider like 1-3 remaster coming out. Like I'd rather save my money for those things, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I also
probably
just
get both of those for the same price.
Yeah, exactly. And I just have zero interest just in like, I don't, what's the, what, like genuinely, what is the point in doing all these Suicide Squad like games and movies? Like, does anyone like truly care about fighting Superman and Batman? Wouldn't you rather play as Batman?
No, I mean, the closest thing I can say is that they looked at Guardians of the Galaxy back in 2014 and they said, look, a ragtag group of, like, not necessarily villains, but, like,
anti-heroes slash non-traditional heroes.
And I think they thought Suicide Squad was theirs and, like, and to be fair, Suicide Squad is made up of more familiar characters than Guardians of the Galaxy. And I say this from the perspective of before Guardians of the Galaxy 1 came out. Most everyone listening to this podcast didn't even know who they were.
Yes, and the thing with it as well is, like, I feel like the Suicide Squad, like, thing is only done in films and movies, especially films and movies, mainly games, not even just movies, but, like, games, because it's really hard to incorporate, like, the Justice League in their entirety because of how powerful the first three, well, the main two are. So you got, like, Wonder Woman and Superman. Obviously, Batman's easier to do because we've seen it done in games over and over again because he's mortal. But, like, people like Superman and Wonder Woman, particularly Superman, it's really difficult to, like, nail his gameplay mechanics. So for me, the reason why they always do like this, well, they've done the Suicide Squad, in my opinion, is just so they can have Superman in the game for people that are interested in Superman slash Wonder Woman or whatever. But they can get around that gameplay legibility design by having some, like, people that are mortal, people that have
haven't thought of that.
Do you know what I mean? And I feel like it's not a cop-out because everyone knows how difficult it is to make a Superman game. I mean, like, Superman Returns was, like, the closest it was actually to being good, you know? And that was a movie tie-in game, but it's just so difficult. But it's still not an excuse to, like, do the Suicide Squad, because, I mean, people that have read the comics and seen all the Suicide Squad do all their things in the new movies with James Gunn and David Ayer's one before that, which was crap, and the comics and stuff, like, they'll probably be thinking, Joe, what are you talking about right now? Like, the Suicide Squad, they're awesome. Like, the narrative in them, like, that's fine. But, like, to a casual audience such as myself and you, Brian, I feel like the Suicide Squad is just kind of like, we're just playing as mercenaries that have, like, kind of superpowers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There is the other angle, though, where I think it's very easy to sell this box art on store shelves and digital marketplaces. Like, if you're not somebody who's, like, keyed into, like, the gaming industry and the news, I feel like this is a game that kids would want to pick up at the store, kids would ask their parents for. Or even just, it doesn't have to be kids, like, full-on adult gamers who are just more casual who might go, oh, sick, there's this big-budget Suicide Squad game coming out, and then they pick it up, and then they're like, oh, it's online only, and it's got games-as-a-service, Battle Pass type shit, and,
yeah.
Oh, it's all, like, shooting? Like, this isn't like Batman? And, like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, kind of like, and we can take as much time as we need, but, like, as a final thought, for me, my question to you on it is, like, what do we actually think? How do we actually think this will land? Because I know both of us would just like to be, it's dog shit, no one's going to play it. But, like, in reality, do we think it will land at least good enough to be profitable and or maintain a player base? Or will it sink and burn? Or will it be one of the best live service games ever and get 9s and 10s out of 10s? I mean, I think that one we're pretty both clearly not thinking is going to happen. But, like, I don't know, Joe. Like, let's say 6 months out, we're getting to, like, E3 time. Is Suicide Squad still, like, is the company still saying that there are great sales numbers and there's great player numbers? Or is it, like, by the summertime, Suicide Squad is marked down to $18 at GameStop used and nobody cares about it?
I think it's going to be middling. I think, for one, I think it's too early to even... We haven't even seen enough of it.
Not really.
I think to, like, truly, like, make that judgment call on, like, kind of what the content is. We've not had no developer deep dives crazy. Like, you know, we've not had, like, a Starfield 45-minute deep dive and all the progression systems and everything. And this, because they clearly want to keep it close to their chest because of the kind of game it is, I feel like. They know.
And all the backlash it's already received. I think, I'm probably making some of this up, but I know, like, one of the Suicide Squad trailers, it might have been the one from last year before they pushed it back. It was, like, one of the most disliked gaming trailers of the year or something, like the dislike button or some shit.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I think it's going to be middling. I can't see it being anything special. You got to have, like, a really dedicated development studio and publisher to, like, make live service work nowadays. You know, like, you've got to, like, have, like, Epic Games level, Activision level. I mean, look at Destiny right now. Like, you know, like, who would have thought Bungie would have hit what it's hit. You know what I'm saying?
Drop the ball big time.
You know what I'm saying? That's Bungie. Like, a legendary first-person shooter studio.
People look to them as the live service way of making your game.
Exactly. And now they've kind of just fallen through every single flight of stairs. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's too early. The thing with me as well is, like, what's with the name? You know? Like, this is such a, like, it's such a nitpick, but Suicide Squad: Kill the Justice League? Like, what?
Sounds like a mobile game.
Like, that's a bad name, in my opinion. Like, what's with the suffix? Kill the Justice? How do you kill the Justice League? Like, couldn't it be, like, Suicide Squad versus the Justice League? Like, wouldn't that make more sense?
Honestly, since it's the first game, couldn't it just be called Suicide Squad?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I just think that's like a really poor name.
It's a second try.
Yeah. I just don't like the word kill.
About this, yeah.
I don't like the word kill in regards to, like, a collective group.
Yeah.
I think that's lame, you know?
Hey, man, are you getting on Kill the Justice League tonight? Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't roll. Like, everyone's going to say Suicide Squad. No one is going to use the suffix, but yeah.
Yeah, everything about this game has rubbed me wrong since the beginning. And I think in the very, very beginning, like the first ever announcement, some of that could have been on me where I was like complaining about it. But it's like, oh, well, Brian, like, you didn't get another Arkham game and you don't want a Suicide Squad game. That's more personal. That's less kind of an objective stance. But as times went on, like, what they've shown's not looked that great. The live service angle and the online only has been annoying. The plot, none of it, just in the constant like dissatisfaction from the wide consumer base and not just me nitpicking and them delaying it into the next year. I'm going to go with my guess for this game is that it is going to be profitable enough so where like the game will... that's tough though. I'm going to still stick with that, but that's tough because you think, I don't know the logistics, but this game's been more or less in development for 9 years.
Mm.
Ooh, that's a lot of money coming from Rocksteady.
Is that like active development or is that just like pre-production, figuring out what they're doing? Like, they did
a Batman VR game and they did DLC for Arkham Knight and they've delayed this game. So it's probably more like a 5-6 year development if we're being honest, but that's got to be expensive. And to my knowledge, Rocksteady doesn't have money coming in anywhere else at all. So I'm going to say
I also feel like this is just a bigger Gotham Knights in terms of the archetype of what it is.
Oh, yeah. And that game didn't do well either.
Like, Arkham Knight just kind of... Arkham Knights just came out... Or Gotham Knights, whatever you want to call it. Gotham Knights just came out of nowhere. Like, it was like, oh, yeah, like, here you go. Like, obviously, it was advertised and shit. It wasn't a shadow drop. But it wasn't like there was much build-up to it, you know?
No one cared, and now it's on sale for, like...
No one cared, whereas Suicide Squad just keeps, like, kind of, like, bringing it out, you know? Like, bringing the donkey out, like... Are you guys excited? Oh, we're delaying it again.
Also, there's no movie or show to coincide with this. Like, if this came out alongside James Gunn's movie, guaranteed another million sales.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not good. And the thing with it, right, as well, is, like, not only are they coming... Obviously, like, it's not the same studio. It's a completely different company. Obviously, you've got... Is it WB Games that did Gotham Knights?
WB Montreal.
WB Montreal, okay. So the people that did Arkham Origins. Right? Yeah, which I loved, I think. Yep. I have an unpopular opinion that Arkham Origins is, like, my second favorite Arkham game. Like,
Arkham Origins is amazing.
I love that game.
And the funny thing is that there's been some serious problems behind the scenes at WB because, I don't know if you recall, but the special after-credit scene of Arkham Origins was teasing an upcoming Suicide Squad game. That was 2013 that they teased the Suicide Squad game. And the rumor for years, even from industry insiders, was that WB Montreal was making the Suicide Squad game.
Mm.
And then it became, oh, Rocksteady's making it, and WB Montreal releases Gotham Knights. I don't know, dude. I think they might make their money back and, like, make some profit, but I think for what they want this game to do, it will fail. Like, I don't think it'll fail like Anthem failed. I think it'll fail in a way where it's like, yeah, this really didn't hit our projections, and, you know, we're having some layoffs, and then I think by the time we get to E3, if summer of next year, this game's going to be on a heavy discount, and the player base is going to have dropped off a cliff, because by then, there's already so many mainstays people love, like Fortnite and Destiny and Apex, but then we'll have had more game releases by then, plus the summer of games. I think it's going to be, I think middling was a good way to put it.
Yeah, I think it's going to not hit targets necessarily, but I think it'll break even. I think that's the best way to put it in terms of what they'll receive. And it'll probably get, like, middling, maybe sixes and sevens at launch, I would assume. I mean, like, obviously we could be wrong, but another thing with it, though, is, like, what is it with WB Games and that company? Like, not even WB Games, but WB in general. Like, they couldn't get the DCEU, like, out of the sort of starting blocks, like... You know, they couldn't even achieve the 100-meter sprint to set up stage one of their movies.
But they nailed, like, Batman video games right off the bat, and look what they're doing to that studio. They're making them make Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
I wonder if that's just because they, like, had... Maybe they didn't think much of that game, like when it was being made. Like I don't know much about Arkham Asylum / Cities / Rocksteady's, the early developments in that franchise. But I do wonder whether it's because they just, like, WB at the time were just kind of like, yeah, go and make a an Arkham game, a Batman game, go. Like,
now, pretty much all the good voice talent from the animated series returned, so it felt like it had some real.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think just with the Batman games, I think the methodology was make good games and sell copies so we can make money. Where with Suicide Squad, it feels like design this game so that it can perpetually make money. You know what I mean? Like, I get the feeling they're not planning to do start development on a new AAA game anytime soon after the release of Suicide Squad. They want Rocksteady to continue to develop and add to this game
so that it can support.
Yeah, bring in money. But I just don't. Can you picture that? Like, picture going to Twitch and being like, "Oh, the big live service games right now: Destiny, Fortnite, Apex, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League." Like, there's no way that's going to be a consistent, like. I just don't see it.
No. And the thing with it as well, like, not to keep going on a tangent, but, like, we keep tangenting on tangents, but the thing with it is, like, Arkham Knight was well-received generally well by the casual audience, was kind of a little bit like, you're kind of running out of steam here, guys, you know? Like, you're running out of, like, creativity, maybe, with the design of the game, keeping it fresh. Obviously, you're overly reliant on the Batmobile. The PC releases since Origins, as far as I'm aware, was pretty poor because they, like, basically shipped the PC port over to a completely different studio whose name I'm remiss. But it's just kind of like... And then you have, like, Gotham Knights, and it's kind of like... You're not over that hill, like, you're not running on fumes totally yet, like WB Games in general, / Arkham, / that whole group, / that IP, that franchise, that collective, but you're kind of getting to that point. Like, you're getting to that point, like, once Suicide Squad comes out, if it is crap, it's going to be kind of like, guys, like, what's going on?
When's the last great game you put out?
Yeah, like, many people would consider City being the last one.
Well, I mean, I do kind of disagree with you on what you said about Knight, because I think Arkham Knight was a very exceptional game that they weren't running out of. I wouldn't say they were running out of ideas or being lazy at all with it. I think it was a very triumphant outing by Rocksteady. I just think their design language had changed, and like you said, the overabundance of the Batmobile. It disappointed some, but there's many to this day that still hold Arkham Knight as the best of the three, even though
I feel that way. Yeah. I should have prefaced by saying, like, I actually really like Arkham Knight compared to a lot of people. Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, it's trash because all you do is sit in the Batmobile. Or, like, I actually really like it. Like, Origins and Knight kind of, like, sit... City is above Knight, but, like, understandably so, but... I like what Knight does. Like, I actually really like the over-reliance on the Batmobile. Like, I can appreciate it. Like, objectively, I can stand here and say, like, it wasn't the best creative, like, decision to make, because that's all it was, really. It was just a creative decision that just went a bit, like, too far, in my opinion. But it was still, like, really fucking solid. Like,
yeah,
I loved every minute of it. Like, I didn't particularly love the Arkham Knight character. Like, I thought he was kind of... But... Yeah, it was still great, so I should have prefaced that in a little, but yeah, I mean,
you know. But to make your point, I mean, I think kind of what your point was is, like, there was a little bit of slipping going on.
Yes.
Since Arkham Knight.
The rope was slipping.
Because, like, obviously there's going to be people with complaints for any game out there ever, but, like, the opinion of Rocksteady's track record was Asylum's one of the greatest games ever made. City's one of the greatest games ever made, maybe even probably even better than Asylum. And then you get to Knight, and everyone's like, some people like it more, a lot of people like it less, you know. And of course, Origins got a pass because they're like, the people who didn't like Origins are like, oh, well, that's not Rocksteady, even though you and me love Origins.
The problem with
Origins
babies.
Was it had lots of bugs and glitches on all platforms at launch. So But moving forward from Suicide Squad, we don't have a lot to say on this, I don't believe. Have you ever played a Persona game, Joe?
No.
I haven't either.
That's that weeb shit. I'm kidding.
Persona 3,
you guys.
Persona 3 Reload is coming out in February, February 2nd, same day as Suicide Squad. Obviously, Persona 3 is an older title. I know Reload is like has additional content. I think it's a remake slash additional content. Let's see here. I mean, might as well.
We're so professional.
Yeah, but I know Joe and I don't have any interest. Yeah, it's a remake.
Yeah, I thought it would be.
I know we don't have any interest in it personally, but I know this is huge for two reasons. One, it's a beloved entry in the Persona series that's coming out in a remake. But then also, it was first marketed on the Xbox and is coming to Xbox day and date with the PlayStation, which is goes to Xbox's like initiative. Well, yeah, their initiative to get more like overseas games and stuff, you know. American.
I mean, there was a point where they were constantly working on like with Atlus and stuff like that, trying to get this work in because their JRPG scene, in the 8th generation and early 9th generation slash mid. Well, early 9th generation, because we're not even mid-generation yet, but it was pretty poor. Like it was all PlayStation, PC for JRPGs, and it still kind of is, you know, like obviously Final Fantasy 16 and stuff on the PS5.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for people that are excited for it, but it's just, one day I'll play them, just because I know they're so renowned, but my big thing with them is they're so long, so when people recommend me like Persona 5, is it gold or royal or
royal,
something? Like,
royal, I think.
Royal. I think gold is Persona 4 gold, right? But Persona 5 is like, they're always like, yeah, you got to play Persona 5. And it's like, yeah, but it's like 100 hours and that ain't the kind of game to start me on, guys. It's like, you know, you gotta look at it like, you got to recommend Persona games and these JRPG games. Like, to imagine like recommending a game to like your dad that never plays video games. Like, you're not going to start him on Dark Souls. You know what I'm saying? Because he's going to be like, what the shit am I doing? Like, like gamers of that level don't have that preconceived.
Yeah, you start him on like Jedi Fallen Order. So it's like a casual Star Wars game that has some Dark Souls kind of combat. Then you say,
or like Call of Duty or something, you know? Like, but. Yeah, I mean, we can move on. I'm happy for people.
Yeah, it'll definitely, we know it'll be a big conversation piece, and something people probably, provided they do it justice, something people will probably be referring to throughout the year, because Persona fans are, you know, they're very crazy and excited for that stuff. Helldivers 2 is coming to the PS5. What's that, Joe?
I'm excited.
Are you going to play that one?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a $40 release, right? I don't think it's $60.
Yeah, that's cool. Like, it's a double A game, I would say. The first Helldivers was like top down. I only played a little bit of Helldivers, I feel like, if I remember correctly. I mean, it was a long time ago. But I'm excited for it. Like, it's kind of got like Borderlands crossed with Starship Troopers humor / writing about it.
Yeah.
And I'm down for that. Like, it looks really fun. It's like, I'm doing my part. And then, like, in the background, you've got, like, bugs eating people and stuff. And
yeah.
Like, my arm! You know? And it just looks great. I mean, the detail on, like, shooting the bugs or the aliens or whatever looks really, really cool. I'm glad it's coming to PC, because if it only came to PS5, I don't know who I'd play it with, because I feel like it'd excel. Obviously, it's meant for, like, a co-op experience. But I'm glad it's coming to PC, because then I can play with my buddies, you know, and we can all kick it and, you know, get
this going. Seems to me like a game that's been like accurately marketed and developed to be a game
that builds
its own community, and it's able to keep that throughout the whole year.
Yeah. You know? And I also think it's marketed really well in the respect of knowing that the industry is kind of becoming either, like, the industry's kind of split right now. Like, you've either kind of got your live service, like, never-ending time sinks that only unemployed people can 100%, or your single-player linear experiences that are one and done, i.e. Sony. And Helldivers 2 is doing, like, a cool thing for me personally, where it's this small game that's not full price, that's double A, but is incredibly funny, incredibly charismatic, and it's just focused on those moment-to-moment experiences where you're all screaming because you're getting eaten alive. And I'm down for that, you know.
It looks like a good time.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So I'm excited, February 8th. Again, I don't know if I'd pick it up on the day,
yeah.
but It will
but
be
at the cheaper price. It's on PS5 and PC at launch. It's exclusive. I mean, it's a Sony exclusive and
Sony second party, I assume.
Second party.
Go.
And I think that, you know, that's a pretty good time slot for it. It's early in the year. You don't have that fall competition. You do have Suicide Squad, which came just a week prior, which, regardless of what we think about it, is a big game. But I think, you know, with your only real competition for a couple weeks being Suicide Squad a week prior,
yeah.
I think it's a good slot. Because I don't see anything coming afterwards that could particularly threaten Helldivers 2 till maybe Skull and Bones, which we'll get to in a bit. But
I just feel it's in its own league, though. Like, it's not
gangbusters. Really
unless it does, like, kind of a Lethal Company in the respect that people just are like, gosh, you got to get on this. But I don't think it's going to be, like, massive. I don't want that for it necessarily. I'd love that for them because, you know, if it's a great game, it deserves what it gets. You know, they've obviously worked hard on, like, kind of evolving that series into basically almost an entirely new genre. Which is cool, like, because I wish more series did that, you know, kind of like completely switched up that genre, you know, like tried something different, you know. But I just think, like, even comparing to like Suicide Squad a week before or Skull and Bones, like later on, I just don't see like the same target demographic being it, you know, like it, so yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's going to be in its own pocket, and I think that's going to serve it really well. And with the fan base coming over from Helldivers 1 and the cheaper entry price and the time of the year, I think it's set up for success. And I've heard a lot of people in the industry be really excited for this title. So I'm looking forward to seeing that game do well. Next one that Joe and I'm guessing it's close to our hearts a little more. Tomb Raider 1 through 3 Remastered.
Ooh, baby.
So for those of you that are younger, unfamiliar, Tomb Raider back in the day when it was at its most popular on the PS1, was this very, like, difficult platforming, puzzle-solving. Also, there was combat, but, like, the combat was kind of the third pillar, and, you know, they were difficult. And, I mean, it was very common for people to buy these games and not complete them because you can't just turn your brain off to beat it. I mean, sometimes it's like, oh, backflip over this spike and then bounce off the wall into a waterfall, but make sure you grab the ledge before the door shuts. And it's like, if you screw up, you die, and you got to redo it all. And it's like, holy shit, this is hard.
And half the time you couldn't see anything because the camera was like independent.
And this is also back when the controls were just, I mean, it's tank controls, like they call it. But this is the original three Tomb Raider games. They actually had roughly five in the style, I would say. Some might argue six. I would say five in the style. They had Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3. Then they had Tomb Raider Chronicles and Tomb Raider The Last Revelation, which were all five on PlayStation 1. And then the series kind of hit a really dark spot with, what's it called? That PS2 Tomb Raider. It's called like the Dark Mother or the Black Mother or something like Angel of Darkness. I think it's Angel of Darkness. But basically, this is Tomb Raider when it was at its absolute peak, and they're remastering it with new graphics. You can switch between the new and the old graphics, like Halo, Master Chief Collection, and it's coming to the Xbox, the PlayStation, the Switch, the PC, February 14th. I don't know if it's full priced or not. I would wager it's probably not $70, but it's going to be exciting. I plan to pick it up. I don't know if I'll get it at launch day. In theory, if I just had the money laying around, I'd like to, but I would guess I'd have it within 30 days of it coming out because, like, I want to play those games, and provided they did them due diligence and they play right and they're not broken.
Yes.
I'm excited for this. Are you going to pick this up, Joe? What do you think about Tomb Raider 1, 2, 3?
It might be a day one purchase for me. It's probably the only one on here so far that is.
What if it's done like the GTA trilogy? Oh, man. That'd be so sad.
No. Like,
that could be a prediction.
I would be so upset.
You know? Yeah, it could.
Yeah. Who's making it? Aspire?
The conversation could be like, oh, just go play the PS1 versions. I'm going to go ahead while we're talking. Tell us about Tomb Raider. I'm going to look up and get some information on it.
Well, I'm just excited to kind of see if they've evolved any of the mechanics. Like I've really not looked into this aside from being very excited for it, which is kind of a contradiction in itself. But anyway, that's how I do things. yeah, I mean, I'm just excited. I'm excited to see if they've upgraded the mechanics, whether you have to still turn your whole body to like to move around. I'm interested to get back to obviously the Croft Manor. That'll be exciting, and lock the butler in the freezer. That'll be very
fun. Dude, who didn't do that? Like, that's one of those things where you grow up and you realize everyone did it, and you're just like, I can't believe we're all in that together, and we had no idea.
Did you try and find her naked? See her naked?
I think I did. I was also so young, it's like I wasn't looking hard. But the rumor was you could do some certain combo in her mansion and she would get in the pool naked.
Yeah. And she turned around and be like, no.
But that actually was one proven to be false. I think people did eventually like just make mods of her naked, but that wasn't a game developer.
Yeah, that doesn't count. That's cheating. But yeah,
this looks so good. I'm looking at like the old graphics compared to the new.
Yeah, dude,
I'm excited even more just kind of like looking at it again.
Funny enough, I was playing, I was just like scrolling through the PlayStation store, and my dad was sitting next to me the other day after Christmas, and like I went onto the Tomb Raider 1-3 Remastered Collection not to pre-order or anything, just have a look at it and look at the pictures, and he remembers it was that iconic, you know, like back on the PlayStation 1, and he literally like it was just silence, and then he was like, that game was fucking shit. And I was like, wait. I was like, wait, what? Like, why? Because I don't think he ever played them. Like, he's not a big gamer. Like, he plays a bit of Call of Duty every now and then. But, and he was like, yeah, everyone was like pixelated. And I'm like, dad, it was like the PlayStation 1.
I'm talking about 1995 here.
Yeah. I was like, everything was pixelated then. He was like, oh. I feel like that's the only game he saw from
this. He's just mad because her boobs weren't rounded.
Exactly.
They were like triangles. Yeah.
Nigel doesn't like triangle boobies.
It's developed by Aspyr and Crystal Dynamics, but usually the way it's worded, it's probably mostly just Aspyr with just maybe some slight oversight by Crystal Dynamics. But I think as far as porting goes, Aspyr has a pretty good track record, right?
Like, yeah, as far as I'm aware. Like, I don't know if I played any of their games. I don't know.
They did lots of the Star Wars games, but I think they're also the ones who didn't deliver on that KOTOR 2 DLC or KOTOR DLC that everyone was.
I think they've completely forgot about it, right? Like, or something like they've said no.
They came out a year later and they're like, yeah, we're not doing it, so pick out a free game.
I remember Mr. Mighty Plays on YouTube was like voicing his disdain for that choice, but
yeah.
I mean, like, I've always been of the opinion, like, I think it's an unpopular opinion, but the new Tomb Raider games are essentially just like glorified Uncharted copies.
Yeah, I've beat one of the first reboot Tomb Raider from 2013.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I actually beat it twice, but it's basically female Uncharted with more bow and arrow usage. It's a good game.
I find it less impressive as well than Uncharted, but I mean Uncharted
is
a very impressive game for the time. It essentially saved Sony in this generation.
There's no game on this earth like Tomb Raider for the PS1. That was a very specific type of game. And once they got away from that, those games pretty much just died off, and now Tomb Raider's kind of just mimicked its contemporaries. Yeah. And so maybe this will inspire them to like make a Tomb Raider 4 or something that's like really just like the classics. That would be so neat, you know.
That would be cool, but like, who's gonna make that? Would Crystal Dynamics make it?
I guess it'd be Crystal Dynamics, but I think they're tied up with Embracer, so I'm not holding my breath for anything. Pretty sure Embracer owns them. Yeah.
Yeah, so. Great times. They just love modern gaming, guys.
And pretty much if Embracer is attached to you in any way, your future is death. but before we get on to Skull and Bones, I'll just mention this real quick because I'm pretty sure Joe and I have nothing to say. Mario versus Donkey Kong comes out for the Switch February 16th. And anytime a Nintendo IP releases for the Switch, you can guarantee you're going to sell millions. So people will be talking about it. People will be excited about it. There'll be people who are like, even more hardcore Nintendo fans than us, like, you know, Nestor in our community.
Yeah, I'm excited for Nestor, you know, Ouija. Yeah.
That'll pick that up. So I'm sure there'll be a few people in our Discord kind of talking about that game, but not something either of us are interested in. Skull and Bones, Joe, why don't you take it away? I know the history behind this game, but you're the Assassin's Creed fan, so why don't you take
it? Who cares, brother? This is my Suicide Squad. I mean, maybe you're a little bit more, like, passionate about Suicide Squad than I am Skull and Bones, I would say, just because you're more attached to that kind of franchise than I am.
Well, Suicide Squad, Suicide Squad seems like it has more potential than Skull and Bones.
I would 100% agree with that. I just think Skull and Bones just needs to just disappear. Like, it's literally, at this point, the Skull and Bones is a sunk cost fallacy.
So what is it? Tell it for people who don't, most people listening probably don't know what Skull and Bones is and why we're talking.
It's essentially a multiplayer only PvP. I think there's some PvE in there, like AI in there, in the missions maybe, like in the maps, in the modes. Live service, on the water, naval spin-off title from, if people remember, the Assassin's Creed Black Flag game. Because that was the point. Well, Assassin's Creed 3 was the first game that included that naval combat where you're, like, on a ship and everyone's, like, singing shanties. And it was badass, dude. Like, even Assassin's Creed 3 was awesome. I mean, I've recently completed that. And then Assassin's Creed 4 was when that mechanic really got fleshed out. And it was essentially one of the most, like, best-selling and well-received Assassin's Creed games, like, ever made, alongside Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, and Revelations. But mainly those prior to. And they essentially have been working on this, Ubisoft. I don't know what studio in particular, because they've got like 17,000 studios that all just sit on their hands until like the execs go, you need to make this, and start whipping. But they just was like, yeah, you need to make a, we need, let's make a basically a multiplayer version of that naval part of that game. And no one cares about it. Like, I haven't met a single person. Like, this might be me being, like, hyperbolic and ignorant, but I haven't met a single, like, I know a decent amount of Assassin's Creed fans, like myself, that do not give a shit about this game. Like, it wasn't the, like, for, like, the combat and stuff was really good in Assassin's Creed Black Flag in terms of the naval stuff, but it wasn't just the combat that made that part of the game special. It was the sandbox. It was the open nature of everything. It was the fact that everything felt natural. Everything felt normal. Like, it felt like you were actually a pirate. Like, it was kind of like a, not a soft simulator. It was a very soft simulator. But with this, with Skull and Bones, it's just like, oh, we're going to load into a game and do, like, PvP and shoot each other. That's not what it's about. Like, you could hunt whales and hunt, like, you know, animals and, like, craft your ship and make it what you want. And now they're basically just live servicing all of it into this homogenized, really odd Frankenstein of a game that consistently gets delayed over and over again and consistently basically gets put down as, like, well, why are they making this, you know? And it's a joke.
How long has it been in development, Joe?
I mean, I don't even know. Do you know, Brian?
About a decade.
Wow.
Almost a decade. And
it's kind of like Suicide Squad.
It's been like rebooted and restarted and had so many issues so many times. And many people have asked, well, if this was going to be like building on the popularity of Assassin's Creed 4, which is like a 10-year-old game, why are they still working on it now? Well, there's some deal they made with like their province, you know, in Canada.
You know more than me about this. Go.
Yeah, we're like, yeah, basically their province or whatever. I'm probably missing a detail or saying it wrong, but like the government has supported development of this game. So they contractually have to finish it. It has to be developed. There is no...
That's stinky.
Yeah, you can't cancel it. So I'm guessing this is the game has finally got to a point where it can be released and be working enough that people won't demand refunds. And it's just going to come out, it's going to get horrible reviews, do horrible sales, and they'll wipe their hands clean of it and move forward. That's what I think is going to happen. You said no one's interested in this game? My little brother, who's 23, at Christmas this year was like, I can't wait for Skull and Bones. So, there you have it.
Is that Noah or is that Creighton?
Noah, my youngest brother, yeah.
Get him out of here!
Yeah, he just bought Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, and he's like, I can't wait for Skull and Bones. So, he grew up with Assassin's Creed. He's an Assassin's Creed fan. So, but yeah, I think Skull and Bones is a game I could literally see, like, and I don't feel like this is being hyperbolic. I could see this game scoring lower than Redfall and getting, and the only reason it won't get less attention than Redfall is because it's not attached to a console manufacturer like Microsoft.
Yes. I just don't get it. Like, I mean, that's so bad though. Like, taking that deal with the province, like their province or something, like whatever they're doing, and like,
yep, I gotta look this up when talking about it.
Yeah, that's so bad. Like, that's just railroading creatives through executive decision, just so like, did they like secure funding? Is that why? Like,
I think it's like funding.
That's so poor, dude. Like, come on, guys. Like, we're over that stuff, surely. Like,
Game development began over 10 years ago. It began in 2013, so we're about to go into 2024.
But this, but the thing is that makes sense, because like Ubisoft, like Yves or whatever his name is, that CEO, like he like sent out a really nasty like email like last year, like saying like your failures are on you, like to the studios, and they like that just sums up like how Ubisoft is now, you know, and that's what's crazy to me about Ubisoft. Like you have like all these legacy franchises that at one time were like gaming's greatest achievements, you know, like I think of like Splinter Cell and stuff like that, and even like Beyond Good and Evil and stuff like that, and Assassin's Creed, you know, like what studio, what team can or what company can come out and say like, yeah, we're replacing Prince of Persia with an arguably better franchise at the time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I would argue that more people remember Assassin's Creed 2 to Revelations slash even to Black Flag than they do Prince of Persia, like, all the way through. And that's crazy. And to see them, like, sort of degenerate, basically, into what this is now, which is Skull and Bones and waste talent.
Oh, here we go. I got the information you want, Joe. So first of all,
go for it.
This game has been restarted and in development for so long. It is now an over $120 million game, which we could be wrong. We could be wrong, but I'm guessing that's $120 million basically for trash. I think this game will be costing like Anthem prices by the end of the year, pretty much. But it says that, report says that Ubisoft has to complete Skull and Bones due to an agreement with the Singapore government.
Oh, it's a thing. Oh, so it'll probably be. So they're not Canadian. They're Singaporean.
Or I guess I thought Ubisoft was Canadian. I thought, but I guess I'm.
Oh, they are, but they have like Ubisoft Singapore and stuff.
So that's what I said. When I said initially, I was like, this is the general idea, but I'm definitely getting something wrong.
Yeah. Well, we're not professionals. We're chilling. You know how I said Helldivers 2 is kind of like reading the industry right now from a studio perspective and a marketing standpoint and a game design standpoint? This is the complete antithesis of that. Skull and Bones is how not to read the industry. You're making a naval game that is a niche genre in and of itself on its own, okay? Like, even if you made Assassin's Creed all naval, it would not do as well. You had to have the sort of, I don't know, it's like your bangers are mash, your sausages are mash, you know, like you got your sausages, which is your Assassin's Creed, and then you got your mash, which was your naval combat. This is just your mash. And this mash is like unseasoned, like there's not enough cheese in it, none of butter in it, like it's, you know?
Listen to this paragraph and hate everything that is modern day gaming. According to a report by Kotaku, Skull and Bones cannot be scrapped as part of a deal with the authorities. The company, in exchange for generous subsidies, is required to hit a certain hiring quota and launch original IPs in the next few years, making it imperative that the title gets shipped by hook or by crook, final look notwithstanding. The other reason can be attributed to the game shift to a live service approach that proves to be an important and lucrative part of the Ubisoft portfolio in recent times. So this isn't even a game that wants to be made or that people want to be made. It's literally they've received subsidies from the government. I mean, come on, it's a live service game like this. Horrible.
You know what my take on this is at the end of the day, just like Suicide Squad, you know, Rocky IV, Ivan Drago, he dies, he dies. that is literally me right now. Go for it, guys, release it, see what happens. If it flies, cool.
Yeah,
if he dies, he dies.
Moving forward, I checked, this article was new, updated as recently as just less than 2 weeks ago, but they still have Destiny 2, The Final Shape on here. That has been moved to the summertime. It is not in February, so we're not going to talk about that, but they do list that as a February release because it initially was. But the last two games of February, I wouldn't be surprised if this takes up the rest of this episode, which means we got 2 months and 90 minutes, but we'll see. We might get a little further. February 28th is the Star Wars Dark Forces remaster. For those who haven't played it, which I haven't played it, I just happen to know some about it. Star Wars Dark Forces was a PS1 Star Wars game that's a Doom clone. It's a first-person shooter like in the Doom engine. Very revered. People really love this game. It looks like a blast. People like myself, Diente, I don't know if I should speak for you or not, Joe, who love classic shooters, this is going to be one. You want to pick up and play.
I mean, System Shock, you know, like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, System Shock's more simmy than it is, like,
yeah.
You know, bro dude kind of shooter. But Dark, I mean, the company that makes these remasters, Night Dive, who, you know, did System Shock, mm-hmm. they did Doom 64, Quake 2, all this stuff. Everything they release is banger, and this won't be full price, and I've never actually played it. So I am day one for sure on Star Wars Dark Forces Remaster. I know Diente in our community, he's day one. He's really excited about it. He's hoping there's going to be a limited edition. What's the company I'm calling? Limited? What's the release?
Limited Run Games.
Limited Run Games. He's hoping there's going to be a limited run for them. But yeah, everything Night Dive has done has been great. This has been noted as one of the best Star Wars games. I'm there day one. What do you say? Have you played it before? Are you picking it up, Joe?
I've dabbled in it when I was younger, but I've never completed it. There's something about Star Wars games, aside from like Jedi Fallen Order and stuff like that, which are more like closely tied to, like, in terms of game design, to like Sony games and stuff like that, and obviously like FromSoft. Like, I struggle to kind of get through them. I don't know why. I've always just looked at Star Wars as more of like a movie/TV thing now, rather than a game thing, which is like sort of blasphemy to a lot of people, including like Joshy and stuff, because obviously like they're massive, like Star Wars Lucasfilm games or Lucas games or whatever, like that was big back in the day. And obviously I loved like Battlefront 2 and stuff like that, but I mean, yeah, I'm intrigued by it looking at the pictures now. I, to be honest, like, obviously since we stopped doing Critical Frames and stuff and keeping up with the news, which has been actually very nice for me, like just having a breath of fresh air, but seeing the images and the screenshots and now the trailer, it looks really, really cool.
I mean
we skipped Wrath of Ruin, which is fine, like it's no bother, but that's kind of a similar thing. Like, it's kind of like that boomer shooter developed on a Quake engine that's coming out.
Talk about it. I mean, that's not a game I'm
Yeah, I mean, it's got that like gothic, not grimdark, but just like dark style of shooter. That looks really cool. I'm sure like Diente will be like really excited to play that. It's got that.
Do you know the developer on that one?
3D Realms, as far as I'm aware.
Okay. Oh, sweet. That might be good. Yeah.
I mean, you've got two like cool, as they call them now, boomer shooters. Maybe not Star Wars Dark Forces is a boomer shooter, but
it's
definitely
Wrath. I think it is a boomer shooter. It's just got a Star Wars license.
Yeah, it's the Star Wars aesthetic, Star Wars theme, Star Wars story. But yeah, I'm excited. I don't know if I'll pick it up day one, but it's definitely a really awesome thing that Night Dive are doing that. I'm down to play it, you know, whenever the time comes. But
crazy, dude, that game was released in 95. I was 3 and you weren't born.
That is wild.
Isn't that crazy? You didn't exist, bro.
Think about it, isn't it?
Yeah, it gives you something to think about. And I guess the original review from GameSpot was a 7.6, which I always thought it was more revered than that kind of score, but that's just one publication. Okay.
Well, at the time, there was less Star Wars games around, right? And,
true.
And I guess it was coming out around the same. I mean, it's got to go up against titans in that genre, like Doom 1, Doom 2. Like,
I mean, it was effectively just another Doom clone.
Yeah. So, and I maybe with the remaster, I don't know what they're doing for it, so don't quote me, but maybe they're adding content, maybe they're refining things?
I mean, they usually do add something.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's not a remake, but yeah, it's a remaster, so less changes, but maybe, you know, Night Dive have an incredible ability to, like, pack the game with, like, nuanced things and change things in small releases, you know, like, they're really
talented. There's a serious chance that, and I'm not like a huge, I'm a pretty passive Star Wars fan. I like Star Wars just like everybody else, but there's a decent chance this game could be on my top 50 just because I'm such a boomer shooter guy. Like, I love
these you are. Games. You're more of a boomer shooter man than I am. Like, you know.
Well, I mean, pretty much every single Doom and Quake I've pretty much played.
Yeah,
I love those games. Joe, what do you got to say about the final release here of February? A little game called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Well, this is one of those things where it's going to be all you, because I don't know anything about it. And admittedly, like, shout out to Wesley. Like, he was, like, we reached out to him to get onto this for a three-way conversation, three-way podcast, but just time scheduling and stuff was not in his favor. But I'm going to leave it all to you, because with Wesley not here, and you obviously basically creaming your dreamies for this game. Go for it, Brian. Sound off, because I don't have a horse anywhere near this track. So,
well, despite my interest for it, it is just in general gonna be a pretty huge release. Not that it means much, but it did win the most anticipated game at the Game Awards. It's really kind of the only, it's kind of the only major AAA game that we know a release date for that's coming soon that anyone's talking about. I mean, the only other one would be Suicide Squad, which has a lot of negativity around it. So, like, Rebirth is kind of the first touchstone game of the year. It comes the last day of February. It is a sequel to Final Fantasy VII Remake, which, for those of you who don't know, it's a trilogy of games remaking, you know, more, you know, to some degree, the events of the original Final Fantasy VII from...
Is it confirmed that they're doing three in total?
Yes, they've confirmed three. They haven't listed the name of the title for the third one, but Remake, Rebirth, and probably something with an RE, or an R at least, for the third game, I would assume. It's been 4 years since Remake came out, so 4 years for the development of the second title, and probably another four before we finish up. I know this is going to be really special for a lot of people. They're actually bringing the Final Fantasy VII movie, Advent Children, back to theaters limited time in February to prepare for this game, which is pretty huge in my mind. I don't feel like that's happened much or at all in gaming where they release a movie prior to kind of accompany it. I have 4 days requested off work for this. Erica is going to try to get off work for this. She's very excited for this game. If you're somebody who hasn't played the original, I would say play Remake and then play this. I mean, honestly, any developer would probably tell you, you can just jump right in at Rebirth, but that's what everybody says. You really should probably play the game before. This is the game I'm most hyped for the whole year. There's nothing that's going to come out after this that's going to be this hype for me. Like, this is at the very, very top with other favorite games of mine like Zelda and Halo. I mean, there's more I could say, but that would be getting in more of to like the story elements and stuff like that. And since Joe hasn't played it, nor is he interested, and it could be spoilery for some, I can pretty much leave it at that. But I mean, it's been very hyped for years now. It's marketed as being on two discs, even though that really doesn't mean anything. It's just that everyone remembers the days of the PS1 where you get a big Final Fantasy release and it had several discs. One interesting thing to note is, unlike Remake, and the small text for the trailer, it said that Rebirth will be exclusive to PS5 until, I think it was May. So that could... My guess is that just means it's going to come to Epic and Steam. That could mean Xbox. I mean, I am hoping for those who want to play it on Xbox, that's how it gets there. But my guess is it's probably just...
It'd be cool for Xbox and Steam. Xbox users to finally experience than that. And it would be also really cool if they dropped Rebirth and Remake on the Xbox at the same time.
Like, it would be cool. Yeah.
You know?
It would be cool. It's just like, you got to play 40 hours of the first game then to get right into Rebirth. But they need to be there. And I really would hope it's not a Mass Effect situation where, like, Xbox gets Rebirth, but they don't have Remake. Because that was the PlayStation 3 Mass Effect
for years. That would suck. That would suck.
Yeah.
Balls.
That'd really
suck. Yeah, is there anything, like, obviously I'm just, like, kind of asking broad questions here because I have no idea what's going on with this game. And when I watch the trailers, I'm just, like, basically a rabbit in headlights. But is there anything you've seen that is, like, mind-blowing to you that isn't, like, spoilery? Like, anything that you're most excited for with this game?
I think the closest thing for me is I'm shocked by the scale of this game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because Rebirth is the second game in a trilogy that's covering the events of what was one game on the PS1. And if you played Remake, the game's very linear. Most of the places you go are hallways or wide hallways that are effectively just hallways with places for you to run around. You know what I mean? So when Rebirth came out, I thought, okay, well, they're doing three parts and they're trying to cover one game. They're not going to want to get too ambitious with the scale. But it seems that Rebirth is a full-on open-world game with traveling and different cities and locations and just open-world, lots of side questing. They've said that you'll be able to do, like, companion quests for every, like, for all the party members, kind of Mass Effect style, where you take them with you and you go do quests that pertain to them. And they're saying that if you do everything in this game, it's a 100-hour-plus game. So,
wow.
Not what I expect. That's what's blowing my mind is I didn't expect to be getting a game that's on the level in the conversation with the length of play people might spend in a in a Bethesda game or Witcher.
Yeah.
I just that was never on my radar. I just thought this would be another 40-hour experience, and then we go to the third game, which is another 40-hour experience. Maybe 100 hours for the whole trilogy.
What was Final Fantasy Remake in time? Like, what was the playtime on that?
It was about 40. It was about 40 hours. Yeah.
Oh,
it was
okay. Like I thought it was a longer game than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you skipped things and knew what you were doing, it's probably comparable to like Ragnarok's length, like a third-person 30-hour game, maybe.
Yeah,
If you skip or if you really know what you're doing and kind of rush through it, but Rebirth's going to be this massive thing where like I'm posing the question to myself of like, you know, Brian, you usually like to skip side stuff so you can go and get that story. And I'm really going to want the story, but like this is not a game where I'm going to want to skip content. Also, I don't want to skip any like companion content because I want all that stuff.
Yeah, that leads me to question though, because I've heard from you and various other places that the side quests in 7 are a little bit like collectathon-y slash kill quests, right? Like just tick the box.
And they're pretty underwhelming.
Yeah. So with that in mind, is there anything this game you want this game to have that improves upon Remake? You know, obviously not getting spoiler territory, but yeah.
I think it has to if it's going to be this. I mean, I think they said you can beat the game pretty like effectively in like 50, 60 hours, but they did say like doing everything, this is a 100-plus hour game. But I would think that they would have to put a little more effort into the side quests because by the nature of being open world, people expect the side quests to be better. Whereas like in the first game, they could get by with it more because like Remake was more linear with like, oh, here's a spot for you to go do an additional 6 or 7 quests if you want, or you can continue the story. Now it's going to be like, oh, open world, go here, help this person. There need to be a little better. And I mean, the thing is, it's not like, and Wesley had the exact opinion I thought he would, is, you know, he went into Remake and it's like, yeah, the side quests aren't that good, but it's something to mix up the gameplay and there's not like a horrendous amount of them, so it's still fun to do the side quests. You know, so like, if they can strike that balance, like, If Rebirth has like 10 or less side quests per zone, that might be okay for them to not be the highest quality. But if there's literally 300 side quests in Rebirth, you need to do something to make them worthwhile or else it's going to feel like an Assassin's Creed kind of just go flags on the map. Like,
I can relate to that because I've literally just platinumed Assassin's Creed Origins, which I'd give a solid 8 out of 10, but I think I put about 60 hours into it and I would say I hit about the 40-hour mark. And similar to, like, I guess Final Fantasy, that could happen with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and maybe even like things like Starfield with the quests and stuff like that. It just kind of started to drag and it kind of like started to bring it down. And I mean, that's entirely on me wanting to go for the platinum. So I wholly accept that. But if you're developing a game that has such a breadth of content with such breadth of area and everything's pretty and it's inviting to see rather than like a, like, because that's the thing with that open world, is like it makes you want to go there because it's more sandboxy, it's more open, whereas linear is just kind of like I'm going down these corridors and I don't really want to go down those corridors because I know what's down those corridors. Whereas open world, a lot of the time, especially with like things like Zelda and stuff and Elden Ring, you don't know what's over in that corner. But it was the same with Origin, so I totally relate to that. Like, you kind of want to like, you want to make that open world actually worthwhile, you know?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what's the point in that open world? Like, you can get away with having extra areas on a linear plane, you know what I'm saying?
And that's my thing with, like, Remake. Remake was so linear that I felt like all the additional content was just a little extra seasoning, you know? But you have a different expectation when you go open world. And especially, there's so many open world games out there, like, you're already fighting an uphill battle. Because, like, no one's expecting Rebirth to be Witcher 3 or Breath of the Wild. Because it probably won't be, right? So, like, what we're expecting is for it to hopefully be better than your standard Far Cry or Assassin's Creed, which is already, you know, takes work to do noticeably better than that still. So, Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was just going to say, like, the thing with it as well is, like, in my experience, sort of the length of a game, it's like the length of the side content should at most, in my opinion, double the length of the main narrative on average. Because I, from my experience, just anecdotally, not that this is based on any like statistical basis that I've done it on, but like if it goes over that, which is what Origins did, it's like, oh, Like, yeah. You have like a 15-hour story, maybe pushing 20, and then you have 40 hours of side content with extra bits on the map. No way.
Well,
and
that's, you guys know me. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Joe. Go ahead.
No worries. That's the reason why like Odyssey and Valhalla and stuff like that have kind of gone off the deep end. And a lot of people are just kind of like, I don't want that, you know, like leave that out. And that's why they went back to Mirage kind of thing temporarily. But yeah, carry on anyway. I've interrupted you twice.
No, I mean, you know me that like I don't have to be a completionist by any means. So like even if I'm doing side quests in Rebirth, if I get to the point where like I'm 40 hours in and I'm just seeing lots of shovelware, like,
yeah,
oh, find 5 flowers, kill 10 ostriches type thing, I'm going to be like, no, I'm skipping these. I don't need to do these at all. But I think this is going to be, I have strong vibes that this is going to be the entry in the series that really sticks with people. I don't think it's going to be Remake or the one that follows this. This is going to be the Assassin's Creed 2 moment where it's like elevated to something better. And I think it's going to be huge. I think this will probably be a game of the year contender. Most likely it won't win if it has any stiff competition, but I think it'll be a contender. But to be fair and to not, you know, completely run away with my hype, I remember the year Remake came out and I played it at launch and I had a great time. As the year went on, like, it's not like Remake was so big it dominated the conversation all year. It was very much a first quarter of the year game that people were hyped about, talked about, and then as the year went on, other games got more conversation. And I think we'll more or less see that again with Rebirth. I think we'll, as we get into the summer and fall, like, we'll look back at Rebirth as a great... I mean, obviously, people like me, it's going to be, like, best game ever, but, like, we're going to look back at it as an early release game that was great and huge, and it'll probably be a contender. But I'm guessing it will... It's not going to be like the Baldur's Gate 3 of the year or anything like that.
No.
I'm not trying to say that it's going to be that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with it as well is that because I spend time with you so much and I talk about games with you so much, I think in my mind even, like, the sort of impact that that game has on the industry, not that it has very little, I'm not saying that, but it's kind of inflated massively. Because I'm constantly talking to you about Final Fantasy, not necessarily specifically about Final Fantasy, but it does come up in conversation quite a lot. Just like me with The Witcher 3 or God of War Ragnarok. Because like in many ways, like God of War Ragnarok is kind of like on that level, like of a Final Fantasy 7 remake / rebirth. It's like, it's not exactly an Elden Ring, it's not exactly a Baldur's Gate, but like it's my Baldur's Gate, it's my Elden Ring. And Final Fantasy is the same with you, you know, like it's your Elden Ring.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think my perception, at least, I'd have to check the sales numbers, but I think God of War and Spider-Man are still bigger, more notable releases than the 7 Remake series.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially Spider-Man. Like that's, I mean, that sells gangbusters.
You're kind of targeting, I mean, it's a major IP, so it's not like they're having any trouble getting sales, but you're kind of targeting a specific group because you're like, this is a Final Fantasy game. It's also a Final Fantasy 7 specific game. It's also a remake series, and this is also the second part.
Yeah.
You know, so this isn't just Elden Ring or just the sequel to God of War. It's very much like a specific Final Fantasy's remake series, the second part, you know?
And it's so, it's stemming from a niche genre, or what is now a niche genre now that hack and slash and stuff have evolved. You know, you have, like, it's kind of got that turn-based hybrid combat.
Yeah.
And that's not in the spotlight as it used to be. Back on the PlayStation 1 when Final Fantasy 7 original came out, you know, it's kind of fell to the back benches a little bit, you know, not to say it's poor or anything, it's just different, it's just a different time.
But very exciting, and probably will be the peak of the year for me, I mean, we'll get another game or two here before we get out of here, Joe. Moving into March, so we made it to the third month at least. March is pretty short, though.
Yeah, it is.
First game I think either of us would even mention, isn't that Alone in the Dark? That's a remake, isn't it? Or is it a reboot? I should probably look it up. I'm guessing you don't know either.
All I know is that Alone in the Dark was like a classic franchise horror game series back in the day. I mean, I feel like Corey Blaster might know more about this than us. But yeah, it's a survival horror. I have no idea whether the new one is a remake.
I guess David Harbour's in it.
Okay, so apparently it's a reimagining of the original 1992 video game in a similar style to the Resident Evil remakes. So I mean, David Harbour's your protagonist, Edward Cornby.
This will definitely be getting some coverage, and if it's actually good, it'll be talked about a lot. Because we're having this resurgence of, like, you know, that third-person horror. You know, we have Dead Space.
I'm all for
Resident Evil 4 remake, Alan Wake 2, you know. So hopefully this is another entry into that.
Yeah, I just, all I remember Alone in the Dark, I've never played Alone in the Dark aside from the 7th gen game that came out on the Xbox 360, and I think on the PS3 and PC, I'm not sure, but it was pretty bad. Like, I remember it just being kind of like, I don't know if it was buggy, I can't remember if it was buggy or it was just kind of naff. Like, everything about it was just kind of like, it was just lacking atmosphere, it was lacking cool gameplay mechanics, it just wasn't necessarily very intriguing on a baseline level. So a lot of people will just kind of, and the 7th gen was kind of when survival horror towards the late part of the 7th gen with Resident Evil 6 and stuff and Dead Space 3 and stuff, it was when survival horror was starting to like kind of close the coffin a little bit, you know, ready for the final nail, which was like, I don't know, mid between the 7th and 8th generation, you know, before Resident Evil 7 came along. But yeah, it'll be cool to see if it does well. Again, it's kind of a similar situation to the Prince of Persia game in January. Kind of dipping that toe in. I've seen the trailer. It seems to be a little bit more AA than it is AAA. I'm just excited to see if it can kind of climb the mountain to get on the level of, you know, the Resident Evil games. Maybe like, this might not do gangbusters. This might do just enough for them to like bridge into that triple A sphere for the future Alone in the Dark games, potentially. Again, dipping the toes, seeing their targets, assessing it, you know, getting their analytics in, and hopefully it's good, because, you know, Alone in the Dark was a great series. But what about you, Brian?
I think it's one that, I mean, kind of unfair, but hey, we're consumers, so who cares? But like, it's gonna have to get acclaim and lots of good word of mouth and like high scores for me to be interested in it, because it's not something that I have any interest in, to be honest with you. But I said the resurgence of that like third person horror, if it's another good entry, like, and it has good word of mouth, I'd be interested in picking it up. I mean, March, other than still playing the fact I'll still be playing Rebirth, like, there's literally nothing in March I'm confident I'm buying. So
no, me neither. The thing that doesn't necessarily worry me, because there's nothing lying on Alone in the Dark, and I'm not a fan of the series, so I don't care if it flops or flies, but the studio behind it really hasn't released much of note on the level of things like Alone in the Dark slash, you know, the now contemporary competitors of
Alone
in the
Dark. What's something they've released?
Well, you've got things like Titan Quest.
Okay, that was kind of popular.
Yeah,
it was it's a Diablo
2.
Clone.
Got like Magicka 2 and stuff in 2015, but like, no, nothing that, like, they're kind of bridging into the big leagues now, and it's obviously published by THQ Nordic. So yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we always wish them the best in like actually getting a good release out, but yeah, I mean, I'll keep one eye open, just kind of like Prince of Persia, but yeah, whatever.
Okay, Joe, let's wrap up part one on Dragon's Dogma 2. Have you ever played the first?
I have. I've played about 10 hours of the first game. It's very fun. It's like a much more fluid Monster Hunter game. Monster Hunter fans are probably going to like tear me a new one for that one. But like, you can fight big ass like dragons and climb on them and stab them, and you have like a party going on. And it's very Japanese. It's very cool. It's very gameplay driven. From what I experienced, there wasn't much narrative going on. Like, it was there, but it wasn't like, I don't know, like on the level of like a Sony game or something. I have a buddy who loved the first game, and he's very excited for Dragon Dogma 2. Like, he's always talking about it. And he's, to be honest, he's like really the only person that I know that, like, not saying that like this is on the level of Skull and Bones where I don't know anyone, but Dragon's Dogma, I've not heard anyone really talk much about it, just because that they're not in my circle. But it looks pretty good. I don't know if you've seen much of it, right? Like,
not a ton.
Not a
People
ton.
Are pretty hyped for it, though.
Yeah.
And unlike you, actually, Joe, I've heard people talk about the original Dragon's Dogma quite frequently over the years. But to be fair,
yes,
not so much in my friends group, more like Resetera, Twitter, gaming publications. It's kind of become a cult classic. And it seems like Dragon's Dogma 2 is them trying to take a better stab at it and make it an established IP. And it's Capcom, and Capcom has been on a tear lately. So I'm going to go ahead and, you know, going back to what I said when we were starting the podcast and talking about making like broad predictions or ideas of what the year could be, I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction that I think Dragon's Dogma 2 will do really well. I think it'll be very successful, and I can see this in Game of the Year conversations. I think there's probably something special here with this game. It'll be hilarious if I'm wrong and it comes out and it's a dud and gets like sevens, but like, I don't know. I'm sensing something special from Dragon's Dogma 2, and I've never played the first, and I don't plan to pick this one up at launch, but I'm very much like watching it, and I'm like, if this is a dope-ass game that people love, I could see me being like, okay, I got to pick this up and get the original now.
Yeah, give it a little dabble, you know, like kind of, again, dipping your toe in. But yeah, I hope it's great. I mean, I have no sort of doubt it won't be, because it's, like you said, it's Capcom, and they are absolutely, like, fucking killing the game right now when it comes to remakes and their own like, you know, new installments within franchises. But yeah, dude, it's cool that it's getting the sequel. I'm very excited for, like, my buddy who's like, ranting and raving about it. I'm glad that, obviously, it's not, like, locked to a platform as well, because it's completely third-party, so that's great. But I really don't have much to say on it aside from, I'll keep my eyes open and see if I want to pick it up.
Okay, guys, this is why I'm so glad we decided to do this in a multi-part series, because Joe and I are at the very end of March, and it's an hour and a half, and we're only at the very end of March, so we've been able to properly cover these things. When we come back, sooner than later, I think it'll probably be probably this week that we'll have another episode up. We're going to be going into Princess Peach Showtime and Rise of the Ronin to close out March, and then we'll head into April. Any final thoughts on what we've talked about today, or kind of the vibes you're getting from 2024, Joe, before we get out of here for this episode?
I'm just glad it's slowing down, dude.
It definitely seems that way after 2023. Like, this is by no means bad, but it's not 2023.
Yeah, I need it. I need it, dude. Like, I just need that, like, I need it to kind of mellow out a little bit, you know, like, chill out, relax. Like, I'll be honest, like, just looking through everything we've talked about, the only thing I'm truly interested in, like, but not, like, overly hyped about, like, to the point of picking it up day one, or maybe kind of picking it up day one, is Tomb Raider, and maybe Helldivers 2, probably Helldivers 2, but, yeah, Tomb Raider, the remaster collection of Helldivers 2, so that goes to show, like, I think by this point last year, I'd have probably had like 5 games that I was like, I got to pick this up, and I just never got around to doing it, you know? So yeah, it's cool that it's a slower year personally for me. And yeah, what about you, Brian?
I don't think we'll ever get a 2023 year again, unless there is some national pandemic or crazy world event that leads to that, which I would prefer does not happen. And that's not to say that, like, you know, it doesn't matter what anyone says, 2023 is the best year. I'm not saying that. Like, plenty of people are going to have years they like more. But as far as the amount of games of quality that released in a year, I'm not sure there is a year that beats 2023. I think that is number one for the quality meets quantity in a year's time. So, I don't know. I'm excited to get into 2024, because there's a couple games I care about, and maybe it'll be a little more relaxed and give us time to dive into some of the ones we missed in 2023. I mean, even myself, like, I played a lot in 2023, but I didn't play Jedi Survivor, which I wouldn't mind playing if I can get it at a good price. Diablo 4, I'm not particularly interested in, but, like, if I got a sale on it, maybe I'd try it. There's several games there, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude.
So, yeah. So, guys, that's part one of what to expect in 2024, and Joe and I will come back at you soon with part two to fill you in on the details. Guys, we thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Sacred Icon Podcast. And as always, keep it sacred.